and welcome to another weekly episode of Popcorn Optional, a movie podcast where we talk all things movies, but mostly this week we're just going to be reviewing The Big Sick. We don't have a lot of news, kind of chill after the whole Comic-Con storm, and we're kind of just going to review the movie, and we're also going to talk about some things that we're excited about coming up this fall. So tonight I am joined by my co-host Trevor Allison.
Heyo.
My name is Cameron Selena. Jake Brown couldn't be with us tonight. But he is with us in spirit, as always. But let's just go ahead and get right into kind of talking about what we're excited about. And this kind of came about because August is looking kind of dead. And if we're being honest with ourselves, there are... Okay, let's be honest. Let's be honest with ourselves. There are... two movies that are pretty much locks to be good. There are two movies that are could be good, could be utter garbage, and that's it in the whole month of August. August 4th, we have Detroit, which has already been getting good reviews. Uh-huh. That's exciting. I think we're all excited about the new Catherine Bigelow.
Of course.
Then there's The Dark Tower.
Which I have some serious marketing fatigue on, but I think is going to be good.
So what's your marketing issues with?
Okay, so I think that I didn't go back and look at my list. I meant to today and I forgot, but I'm pretty sure this has played in front of every movie that I've seen in the theater this year.
They are marketing the heck out of this movie.
Yeah, not only that, but it played twice in a row in the when I saw The Big Sick this weekend, which I mean was obviously not on purpose, but kind of hilarious given that I've seen it so many times already.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't read. So I've read like the first little bit of The Gunslinger, which is the first book in the series, but there's seven books and this movie is an hour and a half. And I don't know if they're trying to do the whole series in one movie, but it seems like they kind of are.
What I understood was that this was kind of a continuation of the series.
Yeah, so but I don't want to get into... I kind of know... Well, I had it spoiled for me, kind of, and so I don't want to spoil it for people, but if you know how it ends, it kind of tails off the end of the series, and, like, it's hard to explain, but, yeah, I don't know. I'm curious about it just because it's this one Stephen King who, you know, is either amazing or I mean, his stories are all great, but his movies either are translate well to screen or they don't. I think this one's going to might not translate well, but that's not for me to decide.
I mean, well, I would say that Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey locked in a battle for the fate of the universe is probably not going to be bad.
Could it though? Could it be that bad?
Idris Elba can carry just about anything.
Yeah, Idris Elba may like. So I was after we did honorable mentions last week, which you, if you haven't listened to our episode last week, go listen to it. Debuted a really fun new segment called Honorable Mentions about people that would bring you to the theater if all you knew about the movie was that they were in it. Idris Elba may be an honorable mention for me.
I'd have to think about it, but I think he's pretty close for me as well. He's so great.
Yeah, he's McConaughey is pretty close. Like, I feel like if McConaughey didn't have like that slump in his career, McConaughey, like if you just put McConaughey's good films up, he would for sure be a mensch.
Yeah. But also Sahara.
Hey, okay. I actually really like Sahara. I think Sahara is the ugly stepsister to National Treasure.
That's what I was gonna say. It's like if you can suspend all logic, it's awesome, just like the National Treasure movies.
Yeah, which for historians like you, it's probably not possible, but for people who aren't so great with the history, it's a fun little film. And it's got Steve Zahn in it. It's got I don't know which one it has in it of Penelope Cruz or Salma Hayek. I think it's Penelope Cruz.
They're the same person.
I don't get how they're not related. Like, it boggles my mind how they look identical. Like, I think if...
And even, well, I mean, really, one of them is from Mexico and one of them is from Spain. So, like,
yeah,
it's not even like they're from the same village on accident or something.
No, I mean, it's, there's no way they're related, yet they're both famous. They both... It's like the Jessica Chastain, Bryce Dallas Howard thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But okay, so let's move along. So August 4th, Detroit, Dark Tower. There's also the Halle Berry movie Kidnap, which I've seen nothing for. There's also in limited release Wind River, which is with Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen from Taylor Sheridan, who wrote Sicario and Hell or High Water. Fun fact for our listeners.
I'm intrigued by that. Fun fact for our listener,
Hell or High Water was the first episode that we did a practice run on.
Oh, that's true, yeah. That Halle Berry movie, Kidnap, I saw a trailer for it the other day. It looks, yeah. I mean, it's one of these like low budget, high star power thrillers. It's like, it looks kind of like Cellular, that old Chris Evans movie, except she's going after her own kid and not someone else.
Ew. Okay.
So whatever that's worth.
What's like, oh man, Halle Berry. Okay. Well, I feel like Halle Berry was like at one time the most sought after actress in the world and now is like doing these like B level thriller horror movies.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Like she just has so much more potential Oscar. Than that. She has an Oscar. Oh, you know what it is? I bet you Catwoman killed her career.
That seems pretty likely.
Yeah. So August 11th, we have Annabelle Creation, which you know I'm not getting anywhere near. Glass Castle, which I think is Brie Larson, and I don't know much else about that one.
I saw a trailer for that in front of Big Sick. I don't know. It kind of looks like an intentional cry fest. I'm not sure about it.
Like, what was that one that came out last year? That was Derek Chan France's. The Sea by the Lighthouse by the Sea or whatever with Alicia Vikander and Michael Fassbender. That was one of those, cry for me, please. And then in wide release, I'll hit on all the wide release films and then I'll kind of just touch on a couple limited release films that pique my interest. Another wide release film on August 11th is The Nut Job 2, Nutty by Nature, because everybody's asking for that.
I don't even know what that's about at all, and I don't want to know anything else about it.
Yeah, I think we're good. August 11th is also The Good Time featuring Robert Pattinson, and the trailer for that one's insane. Like, that's one of those films that it's like, if we have a chance to review it, I would very much like to do that. It played at Cannes Film Festival. Supposedly got really good reviews. Pretty interested.
Yeah, it looks pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It looks pretty crazy. I would be interested.
August 18th, we get the other film from August that we just know is going to be amazing because it's Soderbergh, and that's Logan Lucky, starring Channing Tatum, Adam Driver, Daniel Craig, Riley Keough, and there's even more, like Catherine Waterston, what's her name that was married to Tom Cruise?
Katie Holmes,
there we go. Thank you. Brian Gleeson, Sebastian Stan, Seth MacFarlane. I mean, the cast for that's insane, and of course it is because it's Soderbergh. But that film just looks amazing. Like, yeah. If I'm putting together a list of movies I'm pumped for that have yet to come out this year, that's top five.
Yeah. I mean, show up only for Daniel Craig with a Southern accent. That's all you need to know.
Yeah. And Channing Tatum in anything.
Yeah, for real.
The other film on August 18th is The Hitman's Bodyguard featuring Ryan Reynolds and Samuel L. Jackson, which is going to go one of two ways. It's either going to be amazing and it's gonna be like the breakout hit of the summer, or it's gonna be utter garbage and it's gonna lose tons of money. Well, I guess
I feel like
tons of money.
It's gonna make money. As I watched the trailer, I couldn't help but feel like I'd seen it before.
Okay, where is this? Have you seen this before? Is this like I'm waiting for the punchline of you to be like, and it's this movie.
It's kind of like, I mean, it's like Two Guns plus Safe House plus Red.
Yeah, it's I don't know what to make of it. I'm not super excited about it. I think they're banking on the fact that people are like, oh, it's Ryan Reynolds doing comedy, like as if he was in Deadpool. Okay, yeah, okay, let's do that. I don't know. It's just it hasn't like really piqued my interest. But the thing is, the next week is a movie called Leap, which is an animated film that nobody's ever heard of, and Terminator 2 in 3D, and that's literally it. So if one of those films is good, it's gonna make some moolah.
That's probably true.
And then we get into September. We have Close Encounters of the Third Kind in re-release. The Layover featuring Kate Upton and Alexandra Daddario, which looks just like why. And then we get to September 8th, and we finally have a movie that looks like it could be good once again, which is It. We've talked about horror films on this podcast before and how much I'm not a fan of horror films, but I'm incredibly intrigued by It. Trevor, where are you at on It? I should say It is the name of the movie. It.
I don't know. I know that the story is a classic. I know that, was it a mini series before? Is that right? Is there a?
I think it was. So I mean, the book, it was originally like two movies, and then I think there was a mini series with Tim Curry.
Okay, I know that every iteration of it is pretty highly regarded.
Yeah.
Again, it's not my deal. It doesn't seem interesting to me in the way that like It Comes at Night felt like it was going to be interesting and different, and it was. Or even like The Cabin in the Woods, that kind of thing. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's fair. We get into September 15th and you have American Assassin, which looks like a John Grisham novel come to life.
I mean, yeah, it's
Ted Bell novel.
I've got some background on this because it's based on a series of novels by Vince Flynn, who is my dad's favorite author. My dad loves these books. Vince Flynn actually recently deceased. He died. I think he was not old. He was like in his 50s, but he wrote these books on the character Mitch Rapp. This is apparently the first one, kind of an origin story, not the first book written, but the first book chronologically. And it seems like they're setting it up to make it a whole Jack Ryan series kind of deal.
Yeah,
Where they keep rolling, because I mean they've got there's I think 10 or 12 books. I don't know. My dad's told me about it, but I haven't paid very close attention. Sorry, Dad. but I mean my dad is the target audience, like middle aged American male who reads these spy novels and loves it when the good guys beat the bad guys.
Yeah, it sounds about normal. It sounds like most spy movies that we get. But moving into, or also September 15th is Mother, which the trailer came out today. Trevor, did you have a chance to check out the trailer for Mother?
I did watch it, and it is that typical Aronofsky of what is going on, but this is going to be good.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be one of those movies that it's like, if you like Black Swan, this is pretty much a sister film to that.
I mean, I'm pretty set with Aronofsky as I watch his movies, I think they're amazing, and then I never want to see them again.
Or think or talk about them again. I mean, Black Swan is the most beautifully disturbing film I've ever seen, and it's one of those things like I don't, outside of like, I'm trying to think of movies, I don't know if I've ever been so like disturbed in a non-horror. And I guess it is a horror film, but it's like, it's just kind of like, just, I don't know. It's just, and it's disturbing because of like the truth in it, of like how far how real it seems and how far she's willing to go for her dreams. I think like that's what makes it disturbing.
Yeah, it's got that like believable supernatural feel to it, which is hard to achieve.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Then we get to September 22nd. We have Kingsman: The Golden Circle, Lego Ninjago Movie, and then in limited release, we have two movies I'm actually very excited about: Battle of the Sexes with Emma Stone and Steve Carell, and Stronger with Jake Gyllenhaal. Trevor, which of these, if you had to pick one of these that you're like, hey, let's review that week, which one are you picking?
Probably Battle of the Sexes. I'm not terribly interested in it. I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I know we've talked about this. I don't love biopics and true events, especially when they're well-known true events. I'd rather watch a well put together documentary on it than actors being in it. But
this fall is going to be very unfortunate for you then.
But watching Steve Carell and Emma Stone talk trash at each other for 2 hours could be good. I can do that.
Yeah, I'm in on that as well. I like all the Lego movies, or I guess the two that have come out so far. So, and Lego Ninjago movie looks to be fun. Kingsman: Golden Circle, the first one was a really fun time, but kind of forgettable.
I was gonna ask you about that because I didn't see the first one, but this trailer, I've seen it so many times, but it looks like it's a lot of fun. So I'm kind of intrigued.
It's a lot. It's a really fun movie. I say forgettable, but now that I think about it, I mean, there's a couple scenes that are pretty great. And I mean, it's an entertaining movie. It's good for what it is. But Battle of the Sexes looks great, and Stronger is, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal reminding us why we love Jake Gyllenhaal.
Is this the Jake Gyllenhaal Oscar movie?
This is the Jake Gyllenhaal Boston Marathon bombing Oscar movie.
Oh yeah, this could be his Oscar.
This could be it. We'll see. I don't, you know, you never know. There could be something else like American Made coming out September 29th with Tom Cruise that could take it away from him.
I'm pretty excited about American Made. I think it looks pretty awesome.
Okay, so that's what interests me is for somebody who just said that they're not interested in biopics or true stories, what about American Made gets you so interested in this movie?
I think it's that I don't know anything about this at all. And I think it's the way the trailer has framed it, maybe. There's a problem that a lot of biopics or true story picks do is that they try to act like they're kind of a documentary with actors instead of using the full disposal of what they can as being a feature film as opposed to a documentary. It seems like American Made, based on the trailer alone, has kind of taken advantage of those things by kind of doing this whole like kind of larger than life kind of thing. I don't know. Well, maybe I just don't like movies I don't like and do like other movies.
In other words, I don't know why I like what I like, but I like it, and you should like it too. Then we get Trevor's probably favorite movie of the year. I think when it comes out, it's going to end up being Trevor's favorite movie of the year, which is Flatliners, which also comes out September 29th.
I've already talked about it. I can't talk about it anymore.
Part of me is like, okay, so if American Made gets like, you know, it's like, it's fun, but it's not great. And then Flatliners just tanks. It's like, do we see Flatliners? Cause it's going to be fun to just kind of talk about it. Like, is it one of those films that it's like, man, that was terrible, it's gonna be fun.
I might
to
consider
about.
That.
October 6th, we get to probably, I would say, what a lot of people are kind of pulling at as going to be the best movie of the fall, and that's My Little Pony, the movie, in wide release, which is going up against kind of this unheard of small little thing called Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, man. You want to talk about things that I'm avoiding the marketing for now?
I'm with you on that one.
Don't want to know a dang thing about this.
I think I would be willing to bet that if Jake was here, Jake would say this is his most anticipated movie of the fall.
I think you're right. I think he would say that also.
you know, it's got Gosling, it's got Harrison Ford, it's Villeneuve, who's on a hot streak right now and looks great. No, it's visually fun.
I've not seen Arrival yet. It's at the top of my Redbox list. But it's Prisoners amazing. Is one of the best films I've seen that no one talks about.
Yeah. I feel like Arrival, for me, Arrival is like the best sci-fi movie I've seen in the past 10 years. Like, I don't get how it's not a bigger deal. And I mean, maybe it's because like Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner aren't amazing in it, but the story just is so beyond anything else that I've seen in a theater in any time. Like, it's so deep. It's so unique. It's so different from everything else that we're getting that I don't get how more people aren't talking about it. I don't get how it's not like everybody's favorite movie from last year.
Yeah, it kind of, it feels like it should be, it should have the hype that Inception did, but it doesn't.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally. We move on to October 13th, where we get Marshall with Chadwick Boseman, about third grade Marshall before he became
Supreme Court Justice.
There we go. That's sad that I couldn't remember that. And then we also get The Foreigner, starring Jackie Chan and Pierce Brosnan.
Okay, that looks not very good.
I want Jackie Chan, like, if there was one person that, like, I just want to, like, do, like, who just deserves it, I think Jackie Chan, like, that dude just works his butt off and just deserves greatness. And it's sad to see him at the end of his career, like, not getting the recognition he deserves for, like, everything else that he's done.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, he needs to be playing, like, supporting roles where he's, like, the boss in movies like Kingsman or something.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of, and like where he shows up in one scene, he kicks butt when he needs to, and then that's all he does.
I mean, the guy's just insanely, like, he does all of his own stunts. Like, if you ever watch a Jackie Chan movie, everything that his character does on screen, he actually does.
Yeah. He's incredible, incredibly tough. But yeah, I don't know if this is going to be a good movie.
Yeah. On October 13th, we also have Goodbye Christopher Robin, which I'm pretty pumped about. It's got Donald Gleason in it, who I'm a big fan of. Have you seen the preview for this one, Trevor?
I have not. I've not seen the trailer for it. But I love Donald Gleason. So I am interested. It's kind of a cool kind of story.
Yeah. I think it'll be an interesting biopic, and I think that it's going to be one of those things where it's like, if you liked Finding Neverland, just imagine that Johnny Depp's not in it, and it's about Winnie the Pooh, and this movie.
Right, and it's a prime movie to Redbox when you're visiting your parents for Christmas.
That's a good point. Perfect timing for that. Then we get into October 20th, and we have Geostorm opening up against Only the Brave, Some Kind of Different as Me, whatever that is, The Snowman featuring Michael Fassbender, and The War with Grandpa. Those are all five coming out in wide release.
I don't feel great about any of those. Geostorm looks like someone put 2012 and The Day After Tomorrow in a blender. And then Only the Brave is definitely a cry fest. I mean, that's going to be bad. You can tell people are going to die from the trailer.
Yeah. Josh Brolin, Miles Teller, Jeff Bridges, James Badgedale. The only thing that's like kind of iffy about that film is the fact that you have Joseph Kaczynski, who did Tron Legacy and Oblivion, directing. And I love Tron Legacy. I will go to bat for that film, but I don't think that it works because of his directing. I think it works because of the love of the original Tron and the visuals on screen. So, Taylor Kitsch and Ben Hardy are also in this.
Yeah, yeah, it's a very interesting cast. It's kind of interesting. I'm interested to hear some reviews on that because it could go a couple different directions.
Yeah, I haven't heard much, but gosh, I haven't even seen a trailer yet, but apparently there is one. It could be good, could be bad. The Snowman featuring Michael Fassbender, and it also has Rebecca Ferguson and Val Kilmer and J.K. Simmons in it. Could be interesting. I mean, Michael Fassbender for me is one of, if not the, not the, he's, you know, a top 10 best actor working today. So I don't know. I think we have two good options and one fun but bad option to see that week. Geostorm could be fun.
The Snowman could be interesting. I don't know. It's kind of weird looking, but if they do it right, I think it could be cool.
Yeah. Then we go to October 27th, where we get Jigsaw, the new Saw film. Suburbicon, the new film from George Clooney, starring Matt Damon, Julianne Moore, and Oscar Isaac, that was written by the Coen brothers. And Thank You for Your Service, a PTSD war film featuring Miles Teller. I'm going to guess we're going to see Suburbicon that week. I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out there.
I mean, we've already... it was written by some of our honorable mentions, so I think we have to.
Is that the rule? Is that if an honorable mentions film comes out, that has to be the film we review that week?
I mean, I think it's always up for debate, but I think that should if there's like a tie, then that should be the difference.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's the reason why they're honorable mentions, is that they're the reason why we would go see the movie. So yeah, that stands to reason. November 3rd is A Bad Mom's Christmas.
I think we should cut it off here for new movies, because I'm sure that Jake has a lot of things to say about these and I don't want him to miss out on everything, you know?
Okay. I mean, I just want to say that, you know, there are some great films coming out the rest of the year.
Oh yeah. We can definitely, we're going to have some trouble on some weekends in November deciding what to see.
Yeah, I think November 17th.
Double feature kind of things going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's Halloween. Not Halloween. Wow, Cameron, come on. Get your act together. Thanksgiving. Let's go, Cam. Yeah, I think... Yeah, everything's looking good from here on out, or from November through the end of the year. I think there's at least one good movie every week, and... Could be two. I will say, so the interesting thing for me is that as I look through this end of the year list, you know, normally you have things like La La Land or Moonlight or The Artist or King's Speech or Social Network. You have things that are coming out that you're like, man, that's going to be a big Oscar contender. I don't see anything on this list that I'm like, that's going to be the one. That's going to be the best picture. Like, is there anything that stands out to you as like a best picture frontrunner?
As I was looking through what's coming out earlier today when we talked about it, I kind of thought the same thing. The one thing I kind of lean towards is probably The Papers, the Spielberg film that's coming out, because it's Spielberg. It's an important historical event. It's coming out at the right time. So I think that could be the one, but still, even so, I'm not sure that it's going to be the definite thing. We may have one of those years where we have, I mean, instead of two or three Best Picture nominees that are realistically going to win, we may be at 4, 5, 6 where we have like a true surprise when it comes to Oscar night.
Yeah, I mean, there's things from like The Shape of Water to The Greatest Showman. I mean, I think that it's kind of up in the air. And I think that this is what's going to be interesting is that there are films like Get Out that came out in February that could come into play.
And I think that it may set up nicely for a superhero film to make its first appearance.
Which superhero film do you think that's going to be?
I believe it would be Wonder Woman if it was.
Do you really think that Wonder Woman's going to get a Best Picture nom?
I think it could be.
Man. I mean, like, I'm all for that. I think that'd be great. And if it happens, I'll be happy. I just don't see it happening.
I don't know. I don't know. But I think it would be great.
I mean,
you
never know. I mean, for all we know, The Foreigner with Jackie Chan ends up being amazing and winning everything. So,
12 right, Oscars for The Foreigner. Movies. You heard it here first.
That's fall movies. Let's go ahead and get into our review of The Big Sick. Now, this movie initially came out at Sundance back in February. But it came out kind of in limited release back in June, and we're kind of just getting to see it now. Trevor, what were your initial thoughts on this movie?
This film is an absolute delight. This film is so full of, I mean, it has its sad moments and it has its tough moments, but it is so full of life. It's so optimistic. It's so joyous. It's hilarious. It's one of the funniest movies I've seen in a very long time. Consistent laughs throughout the first half of the film. It dips a little more serious, but there are still laughs in between. Some of my all-time favorite maybe jokes that I've heard in some Hollywood movies. And yeah. I'm not usually a big fan of comedy films. I like to get my comedy from TV because comedy film, I think, sometimes devolves itself into something that is getting cheap laughs, but there's not a lot of that here. I think that this being true, or at least highly influenced by a true story, helps it be believable. I think the cast helps sell it, and I think their chemistry together is fantastic. I really loved this movie.
I'm with you. This movie caught me by surprise. I had heard amazing things about it. I mean, you come out of the festival circuit and there's always that film that everybody's talking about, and this was that film. And normally with films like that, I feel like I'm on the wrong side of expectations, in that I've had it so hyped up that by the time I get to it, it's either not what I expected and I can't seem to get back on board with it, or it's just so overhyped that I'm sitting there like, really? This is what you guys like? But man, this film just does so many different things. It does comedy, it does drama, it does relationships, it does romance. I mean, it does all these different things, and it does them all so well. And the fact that it's at least, you know, you hit on a good point. I'm curious how much of this movie, for those of you guys who don't know, it's about a true story of a couple, Emily V. Gordon and Kumail Nanjiani, who wrote the film. It's about how they met and kind of the early parts of their relationship. And it's supposedly true. Supposedly almost all of it's true, and a lot of it really happened. There's obviously probably like little bits here or there that were fictionalized for movie sakes, but Kumail Nanjiani stars as Kumail in the film, and you get Zoe Kazan in the film playing Emily. I think the fact that it is real is just such a... it makes it even like better. Like knowing that like this is like them. Like this is them being like raw of like, this is what our early relationship looked like. Gosh, it's so... I mean, Trevor, you're right. There are parts, like, I was dying laughing during parts of this movie, and there was a certain joke that didn't play well in my theater, but I died laughing, and I was, like, it was one of those things, like, I had to put my hand over my mouth because I was laughing so hard, and nobody else laughed.
I have a feeling, we can talk about it in a minute, but I have a feeling I know what joke that is.
Yeah, and it's the first time I've ever heard... like, I think there's been kind of like jokes made about this a lot and a lot more recently. But I've never heard it made from this angle. And I think that's what caught me so off guard.
I would say that the bottom line for me for this film is, this is the kind of movie that you watch it and you like wish that this happened to you.
Yeah.
Like it's so joyous and delightful and real that it seems like it could have happened to you, and you like kind of wish that this was your story.
But at the same time, like, I think you watch it, and I think one of the beautiful things about this movie is that it isn't a romantic comedy, and like, like Sweet Home Alabama, where it's like even the bad things are kind of like cheery and poppy, or I mean the bad things are bad. Like it's gets deep into like these cultural differences between Kumail coming from Pakistan and kind of what Emily's character is going through without kind of giving too much away. But there's like, it doesn't shy away from those moments. And I think that's where the true beauty of this movie lies, is that it doesn't shy away from things, but embraces them and digs into them. And I don't know about you, but I walked out of this film, like not only like loving this movie, but also like feeling informed on some cultural differences of, you know, I'm white. I grew up in a mostly like white neighborhood. And I think seeing the difference in how Kumail's family operates and how being an immigrant has shaped his life and still continues to shape like his family, that was just like fascinating to me. Like I walked out of here with just such an appreciation for how they dug into that and didn't like shy away from it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It kind of has I guess the theme of this film is what it means to love someone, what it means to give yourself for them, even when you're getting nothing in return. But I think kind of a more stealthy backdoor theme is what assimilation into a culture looks like. We see Kumail, he's a stand-up comic. He's got a Shaun of the Dead poster. I mean, he lives on an air mattress. I mean, he's exactly like how you picture all these other struggling comedians trying to make it, except that he's a brown guy from the Middle East, you know? And he sees himself that way, but his parents see him a completely different way. And this conversation that they have, well, I guess since we're on this road, I guess we'll get into spoilers now. We kind of covered the beginning and everything.
All right. If you haven't seen this movie, please go see it. It's well worth your time. It's out in wide release now, so it's probably playing at a theater near you. Go see it, check it out, come back and check out the spoiler section. Trevor, get into spoilers.
Very funny. So this conversation that ends up being gut-wrenching that Kumail and his parents have in his apartment, where they say, "We got you out of Pakistan, why won't you live the way that you want to?" And he says, "I thought we left Pakistan so we could be who we wanted to be and not have to do these things." And both sides of this completely make sense from their perspective. You can completely understand where his parents are coming from and where he's coming from, and that's why it's so gut-wrenching. It really just kind of tears
that, like,
you apart.
On that subject of love, it doesn't only get into romantic love, but like family love of,
yeah.
So I'll kind of give a brief synopsis of the movie. If you haven't seen it, once again, please go see it. But what ends up happening is Kumail and Emily have this budding relationship, but he doesn't tell his family about her for the longest time, because they're trying to set him up on an arranged marriage, and in their eyes he can really only be part of their family if he marries a girl from Pakistan, or who at least has culturally is Pakistani. And he's struggling with this side of, okay, so I really like this girl, but he can't lose his family. And it deals with this idea of family love of, like, so at the end, so the conversation Trevor is talking about is where he finally tells his family about Emily after she's been put into a medically induced coma. And the conversation is just kind of gut wrenching. And it ends with his mom pretty much saying, like, "You are not my son anymore," and him being without a family. But at the end of the movie, he pretty much just walks into the house and is like, "Oh, where's my plate for dinner?" Like, and starts like using cue cards to like try and talk to his family, and is like, "You guys can kick me out of the family, but doesn't, like, we're family." And I think that's such an amazing, like, I think that's a small little victory of, like, no matter what happens, like, your family's your family, and you may have ups and you may have downs, but at the end of the day, those people are going to be there for you through thick and thin. And I think like how this film handles that is just beautiful.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's, and I think that, I mean, the script is great. I think that, I mean, it comes from real life. I mean, I assume that there is a lot more jokes in the script than there were in real life. It's a
great
script.
Or they're just that funny.
Yeah. Right. Maybe so. Maybe he is that funny. Maybe they're all of them are. Like I said earlier, the cast really sells this.
My goodness. Yeah.
Kumail's fantastic. Zoe Kazan is fantastic.
The real stars though.
Do what?
Holly Hunter and Ray Romano. Ray Romano.
Oh yeah. I mean, if you have only watched Everybody Loves Raymond and then you watch this, it's probably coming as a shock to you. But for those of us that watched Parenthood, we know that Ray Romano is fantastic and can really bring it. He was fantastic. Holly Hunter was great and terrifying and hilarious. Exactly what her character needed to be. I mean, this is a great cast. The friends at the comedy club are hilarious. Bo Burnham and I can't remember the other girl's name. I know she's on
Edie
SNL.
Bryant.
Yeah.
And Kurt Braunohler, his roommate Chris.
Yes. Yes. The people that are not funny are hilariously not funny. Yeah. Just the whole cast really sells this thing and makes it work.
Yeah, I can't begin to express how much I loved Holly Hunter and Ray Romano. And Trevor, like you said, Ray Romano is great in Parenthood, and so we've kind of been cued into that for a while now. But for those of you guys who haven't seen him in a while, it's kind of probably like, wow, Ray Romano is actually a good actor. But their relationship in this movie, how believable it is. And I mean, when we're talking about love, there's a whole nother side of like this, like damaged love between the parents and how they handle that. And it's powerful and it's handled well. And Holly Hunter, just like you said, she plays this like terrifying mom, but then at the same time, like flips a switch and all of a sudden she's this like nice, lovable lady who you're like, wow, I would love for her to like be part of my family. She's delightful. And it feels so natural because of the way that she handles it.
Yeah. I mean, she's that, I kind of what you think of as that like typical Southern mother who's incredibly sweet and kind, but will destroy you if you mess with her family.
Exactly. She's like the bear mom who soft and cuddly, but if you mess with her baby, she's going to maul you to pieces.
Right. And especially the way she carries herself, because she's not a very big person. And it's like pretty clear on screen several times that she's much smaller than everyone. But
and Ray Romano is a pretty big guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And she doesn't feel like a small person in this movie.
No. And
she definitely has presence.
She has that. And there's a scene in the club, gosh, which if really happened, is just like, whoever that frat guy is, you're the worst human being ever. But where Kumail is doing, so Emily's in a coma and her parents are in town and Kumail tries to, I don't know, like get away from them by saying that he has a gig that night and he's headlining and he tries to impress them with that. And they ended up going to the show and one guy pretty much says like, hey man, go back to ISIS. And the way that Kumail handles it is like, wait, so you want ISIS to have more people? Are you an ISIS recruiter? And then Holly Hunter just like takes it in like the most like in that moment you see her get protective of Kumail. And it's just such a like devastating, like how could somebody react that way? But at the same time, like on the other side of like what she does for Kumail in that moment is kind of like in that moment, you're like, wow, that's, like he's family to her at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess something else to talk about with the acting is here we have the main actor is playing a fictional version of himself, which I can't. The only other example of this I can think of is being John Malkovich, maybe. So it's kind of an interesting thing. And I was thinking about this and I think that playing yourself, especially in a true story of your life, would be kind of awesome because you can like do and say and act the way that you like wish you would have after evaluating your life. Like you can, you can be like way cooler than you actually are because you can be like, well, actually I get to try this again. You know, that's kind of awesome.
Well, what's interesting was there's an interview, with Emily Gordon and Kumail Nanjiani on the Nerdist podcast. And like, they talk kind of about like how therapeutic it was for their relationship to have to like write out this dialogue and like talk about the motivations of like why they said what they did and like what did you wish you had said, or like, and it's just like a fascinating angle to approach it from, of like, you are writing, like imagine like having a fight with your spouse and then like writing a movie script about that, about like one of the hardest moments where you found out this guy that you're dating hasn't told his family about you because you're not Pakistani, and you know how devastating that would be, and not only to relive that moment, but then to write it out for everybody else to see. It's I think that's what I love about it, is like, you know, like in those moments that like the raw and vulnerability is like, that's real, and that's like them and their relationship. Like you almost, I think what I'm trying to get at is that the reason why this movie works so well is because it feels so realistic. Like nothing about this movie is like typical romantic comedy, in that something happens that normally wouldn't break a couple up that's as in love as they are. But then they end up getting back together because they're friends or family or somebody talks them back into it, and they drive a moped all the way to the wedding chapel. But it's like, the reason like they have problems are like real problems that people have. And the reasons that they get back together, or like not get back together, but the reason why like they, like he continues to pursue her, is like a very realistic, natural thing. And I think that's what makes this movie so work so well, is that it is real. Like it's the it's like the closest like glimpse of like a real relationship that I can think of in movies.
Yeah. I think that my favorite scene in this movie is when Emily is out of the hospital and she's back home. They're having like the welcome back party, and he pulls her aside and like gives her this like basically like presentation on why they should date again.
Yeah.
And you could just like, you can feel his emotion. He like, all of his best parts are on display. He's caring, he's loving, he's funny. He's logical, he's intelligent. And still, because of where she is and because of how she was hurt and because this is real life and real people, she's like, sorry, man, like this happened. Like, I can't just ignore these things and just say, all right, everything is perfect now, you know? Yeah. And I think that the work that it required on both of their ends to kind of fix everything was real.
Yeah. And I think there's a really interesting line in that, in which like, in a normal romantic comedy, it would be like, oh my gosh, yes, I take you back. This is so sweet. I love you. I've been waiting for this moment. But her line is, you know, this whole time that you've been feeling these things and going through these things, I've been in a coma. Nothing's changed for me. Like there's been no, like he's gotten to know her family and know more about her and time to think and process about like how he truly feels about her. And on the other side, she's been in a coma and hasn't done any of that. And so to expect her to be in that place is, you know, that's not where she is, and that's not where she could be in that moment. And I think just the way that the movie tells that and goes about that is incredibly powerful and just, once again, realistic. It's delightful because it's like, even in that moment, you're like, wow, yeah, that's a good point. Like you haven't had that. And like, you understand both of them so well in the fight because you're like, you want them to be together, but at the same time, you understand Emily's hesitation.
Yeah.
Like nothing's changed for her.
Yeah. It's pretty powerful in a lot of ways, especially like the more you think about it. I think the more I think about this movie, the more emotional it gets.
Yeah. There is a point at the end, I mean, where I got pretty emotional just in him, you know, he's like almost like begging her, like, please. And then when she comes to see his show, and like we as the audience know why she's there, but they like in that moment, it's like heartbreaking because you're like, shoot, no, like say it, please, no. And then like nothing gets said. And I think like that's once again another beauty of this movie is that this movie gives so many opportunities to have that happy ending and doesn't take those roads, but still at the end of it gives you a happy ending that feels more natural than any of the other outcomes.
Yep. And I know we haven't talked about it at all. We usually talk about the director a lot. I think the nature of this movie kind of takes away from that, especially the way it's written and who's in it and everything. Mm-hmm. But I think the way that Michael Showalter has organized this and tells this story, I think really does a service to the script and to the characters. I think it's well paced. I think it's well organized. I think that he didn't, as we talked about last week with Christopher Nolan, always having the way he tells the story be part of the story. I think in this, Showalter completely lets the story be its own. And doesn't do anything incredibly, there's nothing like fancy or weird or offbeat or incredibly unique about the way this is shot or structured or anything. It's just a great story that's well executed with all of the right shots, with all of the right cuts, with all of the right characters, the right performances at the right time. It's just a well done, nice and tidy package.
Yeah. I mean, you completely hit that on the head in that. The best thing Showalter does is get out of the way and let his characters on screen do what, you know, what they're best at doing, which is playing these raw, vulnerable characters. And the timing in the movie with comedy is great. I mean, it brings you out of these deep, dark moments. It gives you like the light moments when you need to, but then it's not afraid to dig into those moments. And I think that's the mark of a true director is knowing when to have your audience feel those emotions and knowing how to either bring them out of it or bring them down into it in a place where they don't stick in that place. And especially like there are movies like darker movies that want you to stick in that darker, lower place, but this isn't one of those. And so part of the job is how do I, as a director, bring you back out of it? And I think this movie does an incredible job of keeping those sad moments like on your heart, but not letting those consume you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree.
Do we want to talk about the joke?
Let's talk about the joke. I assume you're talking about the 9/11 joke.
Yeah. There's a part in the trailer. There's a part in the trailer, and they kind of hinted it where Ray Romano, who's playing Emily's dad, his name's Terry, makes like a comment at lunch about like, so 9/11, and it's like I've always wanted to have a conversation with it, and Kumail's thing back is like, you've never talked to anybody about 9/11? He's like, no, what's your stance on it? And Kumail gives the best response I've ever heard to a joke or to like that I could have imagined for that line, and it's, what's my stance on 9/11? I'm anti 9/11. It was a tragedy. I mean, we lost 19 of our best guys. And Beth just goes, huh? And he goes, that was a joke. Obviously 9/11 was a terrible tragedy.
It's like, and it's hilarious, but it perfectly encapsulates like this kind of like awkwardness of the situation that he's in. Like he's a comedian. He's trying to make things funny. And it just, it's not the kind of joke that like, it's so situational that it works.
Yeah.
And it fits in the flow, and it's understandable, and it's also just hilarious. My gosh.
Well, it's one of those jokes that it's like, if somebody was to say that in real life and I didn't know them that well, I would be like, that's kind of insensitive. Like that was a terrible day. But like in the context, and it's a perfect example of like context in the movie, where he's a stand-up comedian who, you like throughout the whole entire movie, in every bad situation, he's always tried to make people laugh, always tried to crack a joke. That's his thing, is he's always funny. And in this movie, he tries to do that. And it just like the reaction from the parents and like him, his timing on it, it's just like catches you so off guard. And it's so like brilliantly placed that I can't think of a joke that's caught me so off guard and that I laughed so hard at that like nobody else has laughed at. And I felt like, part of me felt like guilty for laughing at it. I'm like, is that funny? Like, am I allowed to laugh at that? But like, I it just was so perfectly placed and the context within it made it feel appropriate.
Yeah. It's.
I mean, like, do you think that there are people that are like, okay, so like in a real moment of, so, I mean, I think we can all admit that 9/11 is a terrible tragedy. I think that goes without saying. Like,
right.
I don't think there's
right.
a person in the world that would say anything otherwise. And I think it's an incredibly risky move to make a joke out of that. But I think because of who Kumail is, the way that it's brought up and the way that it's contextualized within the movie is what makes it work. Like right. you or me couldn't make this joke.
Right.
Just exactly. in everyday life.
Yeah.
But I think that's why.
It works on a screen. It doesn't work in real life. I'm not even sure it could maybe work in stand up if you build it right. But I mean, with something like this, you're definitely going to offend someone. Someone's not going to be happy about this. But I think there's a couple of things here. It works because it plays on this awful and even I would say dangerous stereotype that exists in a lot of the Western world that anyone who's Middle Eastern is a Muslim who wants to blow up whatever building you're in or something. And it plays off of those fears. It also is somewhat cathartic, I think. It's very much a laugh about this to keep from crying about it kind of situation. Whereas humans, the way that some of us are wired, I mean, and Kumail seems to be one of those people, when we're either in terrible situations or talking about terrible situations, which he's doing both at the same time here of different magnitudes, of course. But we deal with these things by laughing because we have to process them with some emotion, and laughter is a lot more fun than crying.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good way to place it. And I think it's one of those jokes that I hope people see it and take it for the comedic value that it adds the movie and don't take it as a, like, you know, 9/11 was a joke, because it's not, and that's not at all what he's trying to do with it. Right. And I remember looking around after the joke played on screen, and like there are people in my theater. My theater was like, I want to say like 50% full. My theater was like, I mean, there were some like angry looking faces in that moment. I don't know if that was just people's like resting face or what, but I mean, I don't think that joke landed with as many people as it should have.
There were definitely laughs in my theater. I don't know if there were lots of laughs, but there were definitely laughs. I wasn't the only one laughing. But I think generally it seemed like my theater had lots of laughs in this. I don't feel like I was laughing a lot more or less than anyone else. I think that it seemed like it's a pretty accessible film. I could see, I guess my minor complaint with the script is there's like a whole lot of F words, which is like not necessarily, I mean, I'm not like offended or anything, but I think that can make a film a little bit less accessible for some people. And get in the way of the language a little bit.
And I will say there are times where it feels, there are times where it feels like it's said just to be said and not, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this, like not for like emphasis or anything, but like just to be like, oh man, we're an R-rated movie. We can say this because we're an R-rated movie.
Yeah, it does. It feels a little bit like a crutch sometimes to show how angry a character is.
Yes. I mean, like, I was trying to think of negative things to say about this movie, and
yeah, that's like the only negative thing I have.
Yeah, I mean, the characters are great. It deals with real world issues and informs, I'm going to guess, the majority of its audience on cultural differences that they maybe aware of but aren't as knowledgeable about as they are about other things in life. And I think it's funny, it's dramatic, it's romantic. I mean, it combines so many things into one movie, and it's just, it's a delight. It's fun.
Yeah, I agree.
Alrighty, do you have any other thoughts on the movie?
One more quick scene that I think was hilarious was when Camille and his brother went to the batting cages and his brother was like in a Cubs jersey and like having so much trouble. And there's like this 8-year-old and Camille's like, hey, why don't you do what he's doing? He's so much better than you. Like just that whole thing of like being, they really sell each other as brothers. Like feels like just like exactly like something brothers would say to each other.
Yeah. And there's like a couple other scenes in this movie we can hit on quickly. There's the scene where the girl brings her picture for the first time and she's like, this is for your files, your X files. And she's like, the truth is out there. it like catches you so off guard. That it's
that was unexpected.
That was so good. And then there's the scene where the guy's on stage. And I don't remember his name. I think his name's like Mike or something. Or like Steve. What is it? Sam. They're like, they say Sam. So like Sam.
People say Sam. Don't you?
People say Sam. And then Kumail and Bo Bryant are on the side and they're like, dude, I'm going to rip him. I'm gonna tell him that like this isn't funny. And then he walks by and he's like, guys. And they're like, yeah, man, you killed it tonight. Great job. And they just go about their conversation.
It's so real, man. It's so real. They just like you just like can't be mean to some people, you know? It's just,
yeah. It's like that guy's up there, he's trying, he's part of the group. Like just let him, you know, do his thing.
Yeah.
I will say, so I feel like the people we haven't talked about are Kumail's parents, who I haven't read any reviews. I mean, I've seen like the Rotten Tomatoes score, but I haven't read any reviews or listened to any podcasts on this, but I hope they're getting a lot of love for their roles in this movie because they did a fantastic job. And I feel like the reason that we haven't hit on them is Ray Romano and Holly Hunter are fantastic, and they're kind of given a lot of different things to chew on. Like they're given comedy, they're given dramatic moments, they're given happiness, anger, whereas Kumail's parents at times feel more one note. But they're so good in this movie and they're so believable, and it's the way that they deliver lines is what seals the deal on making the hard, like how hard it is for him to make these decisions. Like it's them that makes these decisions hard. And it's the way that, like, if they were just any other actors, they would maybe not play this as well, and maybe those moments don't hit as hard, but because of the way that they react, it hits so hard. And it's because you feel that like love and sincerity on their side and them wanting what they think is best for their child. And it's, nobody's wrong, like you said earlier, but it's just that cultural difference.
Yeah. Yeah. They're fantastic. There's a lot of, especially with the way that, that his dad plays everything, when he doesn't talk a lot and but the way he is there and the presence that he has gives his lines a lot of weight when he gives them.
Yeah. Okay.
And also so the part about not being allowed to hug him is pretty funny.
At the very end. And the fact that like they're like his, like, your mom's not gonna look at you. She's just gonna stay in the car. And like they don't give you that. Like I was sitting there the entire time waiting for the mom to like at the last second look over, and she doesn't.
Uh-huh.
Like she holds to it.
But she made him his favorite food.
Yeah. But in that moment, like I don't know why, but her not looking over for me felt more like she loved him than if she had looked over. Like she loves him so much and she cares for him so deeply that she is like sticking to her guns on this.
Yeah.
Like if she didn't care about him, she would just let it go and be like, oh yeah, everything's fine, we're happy, like don't worry about it. But like she cares for him so deeply that she like holds to that all the way through to that point where it's like, he's moving to New York, I'm not going to see him all the time anymore.
Yeah.
So, alrighty, let's get our ratings for the movie. Trevor, what would you rate this film?
I was struggling to find a rating scale, you know, like I do. I would give this one probably 4.5 gift store giraffes out of 5. I mean, if only because he says, I don't even know if she likes giraffes. It was the biggest thing in there, which is such a good way to describe, like, when you're buying a gift for someone that you really like, but you don't know very well.
But at the same time, it's also incredibly funny in the context of like the joke that Emily's dad had told in the scene before.
Right. Exactly. So, I say 4.5 out of 5. It's not a perfect film. It's not necessarily an amazing film. But it's about as good as the genre can be. It's a lot of fun. It's hilarious. And like I said earlier, it's just so full of life. It's so optimistic. It just brings joy to you.
Yeah. I'm with you. It's an A for me. It's funny, it's witty, it's incredibly realistic on how it depicts relationships. Like, it's not all cheery, it's work, and it's sometimes a struggle, and sometimes it's amazing, but in the end, you know, it's because you love that person that you're willing to do anything. And I think it just depicts those relationships in such a sincere way that we don't see too often in movies. And that's ultimately why I like it. I mean, there's some jokes that kind of fell flat, or like you said, with their whole cursing thing. But overall, it's a pretty solid film, and I wish we got more sincere films like this.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and finish it out with our content of the week. Trevor, what are you recommending this week?
Okay, so first, I have to do something that hasn't been done on this show before. Last week, okay, I gave out a recommendation a little bit prematurely. I talked about how I was watching Battlestar Galactica and getting into it. And about 10 or 12 episodes in, it really starts to fall flat and kind of trudges along and gets stuck in the mud. So I may come back to it. We'll see. But for now, I am rescinding my recommendation of Battlestar Galactica. So anyway, yeah, I hope we never have to do that again. That's kind of embarrassing.
Props to you for admitting it.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a man of the people. I try to be. So I have two recommendations. They're both movies. They're both kind of along the same lines in that kind of indie, offbeat, romance and or unromance. Neither one of them are nearly as happy or optimistic as this, but they're both kind of interesting. The first one is Celeste and Jesse Forever from a few years ago, with Andy Samberg and Rashida Jones. They play a couple who has been married since they were in like high school or college or something, and they have all the same friends, but things aren't working out. So they decide they're going to get divorced, but they're going to stay friends and stay friends with all the same people. And it's kind of an interesting look, more of a unique, sincere story, as we've talked about here. And then as far as that gut-wrenching, visceral romance, I'm going to recommend the film Like Crazy, which was directed by Drake Doremus, I believe, and stars Felicity Jones, Jennifer Lawrence, and the recently and sadly deceased Anton Yelchin. It's a gut-wrenching romance film that will tear you down to your core, and is also somewhat of a unique kind of feel or story.
Yeah. I haven't seen Celeste and Jesse. I've seen Like Crazy, though, and it's brutal. It's also amazing that Jennifer Lawrence is in that movie. Like, that was right as she was kind of like breaking out.
Yeah.
Man, Anton Yelchin. That actually makes me... So Anton Yelchin voiced a character. I love anything animated. Like, a huge fan of anything animated. And there's a show on Netflix that's produced by Guillermo del Toro called Troll Hunters. And It was, I think it's his last role. He voiced the main character Jim in it a long time ago. And he even voiced the characters, all of his lines for the second season before he passed, which has yet to come out. And the second season is supposed to come out later this year, early next year. And so he's still doing voice work for that. Or his voice will be in that movie. But gosh, he's so fantastic in that. And what a tragic, sad loss. And I mean, on that same line, I think his best work was ahead of him. I mean, if you saw the movie Green Room, which was brutal, but that was the movie that I was like, man, this kid's got something. And it was only a couple months, or like shortly after that, that he passed. I have a couple of recommendations this week, actually, and all kind of related. Well, not kind of. I'm just going to go ahead and give them. Trevor, you hit on one earlier. If you haven't seen Parenthood, Ray Romano is on seasons 4, 5, and 6, I think, of that show.
Not 5 and 6. Something like that. Yeah, the last few seasons. It's a great show all the way through, though.
It's a great show all the way through. One of my favorite shows of all time. It's, once again, incredibly sincere and just heartfelt. And I don't know of a TV show that's ever made me cry as hard as that TV show has.
Oh, man.
Or that's made me happy cry as much as that show has.
Yep.
It's, you know, highs of highs, lows of lows, and it's great. It's worth watching. The other one I'm going to recommend is kind of an indie comedy that came out last year called Sing Street. It's a musical high school rom-com coming-of-age film that's just beautiful in every sense of the word, and it's hopeful, it's optimistic. It has amazing original music. It's from the guy that did Once and Begin Again. I think his name's John Carney.
Yeah, that's right.
It's his third film, and it's just feels incredibly personal, but at the same time, very like relevant. It's set in the 80s about a kid who tries to start a band really to impress a girl because he wants her to be in the music video, so he has to form a band and create songs, and then they actually become a band, and they actually end up going on this journey as a band, and it's moving. It's just great. It's one of those films that it's like, I can't recommend enough. It's a fantastic film. Last thing I'm going to recommend is, because season 3 of it comes out this Friday on Netflix, and it's the first 2 seasons of a show called, Voltron, the Legendary Defender. It's an animated film on an animated TV show on Netflix. The first season had 11 episodes, second season had 13 episodes, and I think there's 7 or so episodes coming out in the third season that comes out on Friday, but they're also coming out with a 4th season in October of 7 episodes again. It's incredibly well done, it's fun world building, it's got fun characters, and it's just a fun little animated TV show with cool sci-fi and pretty fun action scenes. So 4 or 5 recommends: Troll Hunters, Green Room, Parenthood, Sing Street, and Voltron Legendary Defender. 5. There you go. Wow, that's way too many. Just check out one of them.
That might be the limit. We probably shouldn't do more than 5.
I'm going to try and do 10 next week. Just watch. We're gonna do a whole show.
We're gonna have to start a blog just so you can do your recommends every week.
All right, guys. Here's my 20 recommends for this week, but it's actually gonna be closer to 40 once I get to the end of it. So
just get a Netflix account and watch everything.
Yeah, do that. Alrighty. Well, that's it for the show tonight. If you have enjoyed listening to us, please go to iTunes, like us, subscribe, and share us with a friend. We would love to hear your thoughts on the show. So yeah, give us a review and start a conversation with us. If you want to talk to us, you can find us on Twitter at Popcorn Optional, or search us on Facebook at Popcorn Optional. You can find more about us on our website at Popcorn Optional. My name is Cameron Sinani. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at 321CammyTime. Trevor, where can we find you online?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at TurboTrevor, and I'm also running that at Popcorn Optional most of the time, except when Jake has his silly little things he likes to share.
Yeah, and everybody go check out Jake's work at jakebrown.tv. Incredibly talented filmmaker.
Yeah, he's awesome. And
yeah, deserves some love. So go check out his stuff. Alrighty, well, we have enjoyed talking to you. We will be back next week to, I'm going to guess, review Detroit. That's my guess.
Yeah, pretty likely.
Dark Tower could surprise us. You never know. But as of now, it's probably going to be Detroit. But yeah, we've loved talking to you tonight. We hope to see you again next week. And until next week, we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
See y'all later.